Lot J deal goes down to defeat as taxpayers revolt. More rocky vaccine rollout as the COVID caseload continues to climb. And once again, Jacksonville is divided over celebrating the life and legacy of MLK. Some of the stories making headlines this week. And did we mention Urban Meyer? Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, what a packed news week. We're going to break it all down for you right now with our Friday roundtable. Already getting your calls? Join us. It's 549-2937 to join the conversation. Then later, we'll speak with folk legend Roger McGuinn of the Byrds as he plays a solo show here in town this weekend. But first, it's Friday. Here to discuss, a busy week in the news. We welcome David Bauerlein of the Florida Times Union. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
Good to have you. Writer and journalist Claire Goforth back with us. Hi, Claire.
Good morning.
A.G. Gankarski of Florida Politics. Good morning, A.G.
Good morning, Melissa.
And WJCT contributor Fred Matthews. Hi, Fred.
Good morning, Melissa.
All right, guys. So good to have you all. Happy belated New Year. And there is so much to talk about in the news this week. By the way, everyone, once again, we'll go to your calls in a moment. It's 549-2937 to join us. But we begin with the biggest local story of the week. Lot J went down to dramatic defeat Tuesday night in the Jacksonville City Council chambers, losing approval by just one vote. Shad Khan, the owner's pitch for the city to shell out hundreds of millions to build an entertainment complex next to the Jaguar Stadium, was just too tough a sell in this pandemic. And the acrimony went even further. Let's listen quickly again to Councilman Garrett Dennis appearing on this program yesterday, where he denounced Jacksonville Mayor Lenny Curry, a big proponent of the Lot J deal, and he called actually for him to resign, both over the failure of Lot J and the JEA scandal that has an ongoing federal grand jury probe. Take a listen.
I truly believe if we were in another time, another city, another governor, Mayor Curry would be suspended while this ongoing investigation is going on. And so I think for the healing and moving forward and, you know, turning a new chapter of the city, I think Mayor Curry needs to resign.
Strong words from a councilman who cast one of the votes to kill the Lot J deal. Dennis denied his no vote had anything to do with his ongoing beef with the mayor. He said he rejected the deal on the merits. We will go to your calls in a few minutes. It's 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. And our Facebook page is open. David Bauerlein, let's begin with you. You know, despite all the controversy around this deal, the hefty payout of public funds, the largest in the city's modern history, right up until the vote, the conventional wisdom seemed to be that it would pass. But then at the last minute, it went down to defeat. As we look back on Tuesday's vote, how much do you think the grassroots opposition to this deal had to do with enough council members voting no to kill the deal for the Jaguars?
Well, I was part of the conventional wisdom that thought it would pass because it had been approved 15-4 coming out of the council committee a week ago. But then they lost three of those votes in terms of supporters of the deal. And so it ended up a 12-7 vote. It was defeated, which is kind of weird because it still got more votes for than against, but it needed 13 votes, a supermajority, which is pretty unusual for legislation. But I do think that grassroots opposition played a factor. Tommy Azuri has said he got more emails about it than he did even during the debate over the human rights ordinance and adding the LGBT protection. So this was a huge talked about issue. Council members were definitely hearing from it. It was not an issue that was polling well. Most people opposed it rather than supported it. And so, I think that had a factor on the vote against it for sure.
Claire Goforth, Mayor Curry, in the wake of the failure of the deal, appeared on Sports Talk Radio and said it failed due to personal vendettas by his enemies on the Jacksonville City Council. Garrett Dennis, perhaps his most high-profile opponent on the council, appeared on this program yesterday to deny that. That said, how much of a factor do you think this was in the seven no votes that we saw from the city council on Lot J?
I mean, I would say that's a gross oversimplification on the mayor's part to say that this just boiled down to a political vendetta, because as David Borling was just saying, there's a lot of pushback against this particular plan because of it's a sweetheart deal for Shad Khan, and we're in the middle of a pandemic and people are concerned about the city's budgetary future. I think that it was a sign that Mayor Curry's political capital with council is starting to flag a bit in the latter half of his second and final term. And the question is now, what can he accomplish in these remaining 2 years now that council has signaled that they will push back against something that he very clearly wanted as part of his mayoral legacy?
And AG Gankarski, Jaguars president Mark Lamping, in the wake of the deal getting shot down, said now the Jaguars will turn their attention to developing another parcel near the stadium. It's the Shipyard / Metropolitan Park piece of the riverfront. That is why the Hart Bridge ramps have been brought down to make way for that development. What can we expect there?
I think we can expect a lot of wrangling. I mean, really, all roads lead to whatever the next stadium is going to be. I mean, with Lot J dead, whatever happens, but it doesn't happen to Shipyards. The secret sauce is, does the city put in hundreds of millions of dollars to help the Jaguars build an NFL-quality stadium, which currently the facilities aren't quite at the level of the ones in the marquee cities? And really, if you look at what happened at council, you have a lot of people going their own way, positioning for 2023, and really the discussion of what happens to the future of this franchise is going to be one for the next generation of leaders. So when you get to that 2023 mayoral race, you can see where Shad puts his money, where associated entities put their money, and all of that. But that's going to be the big story of the next decade. And we're going to see a lot of these same arguments rehearsed against and for the development in the same way. You got to put money in to keep the team versus look at all we've neglected for the last 50 years and we're putting money into an NFL stadium. You'll see that debate again and again.
Let's talk about that, Fred Matthews. In the midst of this pandemic and recession with so many out of work and so many glaring needs across the city, spending this much money on that live district, it was just too tough a sell for the public and for the council members. You know, this city has, as AG said, has had glaring problems with poverty, infrastructure crumbling all over town, transportation problems, getting people access to jobs and education. There are so many glaring needs. And so how do you see the city leadership pivoting off of this failure to at least try to address some of what the public is saying to them, which is that we need to discuss our budget as a moral document for the city of Jacksonville and prioritize our funds toward the biggest needs?
Well, that's what needs to happen, and that's what we need to see happen, and that's what people are consistently talking about. The thing with the Jaguars is a recreational idea that has some financial consequences for the food handlers and the parking lot attendants and all of the other periphery services that surround this recreational football game. But it is hard for many people to wrap their minds around why would a billionaire who has owns a $200 million yacht need for us to loan him $65 million that he will be dead when it's time to pay it back? It was hard for people to wrap their minds around such simple things when we have so many basic things going on. We've torn down the ramp leading into this stadium without any public input. The city council went ahead and okayed that, essentially. The mayor has moved on.
You know, they had a couple public hearings on it, but that, I think that was the extent of it. Just go ahead, Fred.
Yeah, they did. I mean, a couple of public hearings on it, that was basically pro forma. I mean, they listened to the public, or even on this deal, which was pro forma. There wasn't enough support in the public hearings for this, but yet they trudged on. I suspect that had the mayor and the Jaguar leadership been less in a hurry to push this through council, if they'd taken it through the normal council route through all of the committees, they would have probably had the votes. And Barline and AG can correct me on this, but I believe if they'd taken it through the normal council process, all the committees, they would have simply have then required just a simple majority vote, and they could have gotten it passed. But by rushing it through and not going through all of the council process, that's why they had to have a supermajority vote to get this done. And now the mayor sits there with egg on his face because, again, he followed up on this.
It's 549-2937. Lots of calls. We'll go to them in a moment. David Bauerlein, what about that? The city and the mayor's office, essentially, as Fred says, hoisted on their own petard because they rushed this. What about the chatter we heard that there was some impetus to get this done before the inauguration, of a new president, concern about a new regulatory and tax picture for the developers? I'm not sure how much credence to give to that discussion, but what about what Fred said, that if they had taken this in a more deliberate manner, they might have been more successful?
Yeah, I don't agree that it was rushed. The decision to not go through the usual committee process was made by Tommy Yasuri, the council president, in order to provide even more attention just for this particular bill. So they met multiple times as a council, as a whole, all 19 council members, and they spent hours talking about nothing but this. It took place over 2+ months. There were changes made, and obviously the changes were not enough to win final support for the bill. The biggest issue probably in terms of the process was the development deal did not go through the Downtown Investment Authority for negotiation. It was negotiated directly through the mayor's office. And so there was criticism of that, and that the usual standards and review process that a big downtown development project would get didn't get done in this particular case. And that did cause some loss of support from council members.
All right. All right. Let's go to some calls now for our Friday roundtable. Tango in Riverside. Tango. It takes two to tango, Tango. So go ahead.
Exactly. Good morning, Melissa.
How good morning.
I just wanted to comment on the Lot J deal. A lot of the back and forth. Particularly Jacoby Pittman, Councilwoman Jacoby Pittman, she said that basically the people who were against the deal were people who just didn't understand it, and that there's a lot of patronization that comes from our leadership, especially from Lenny Curry, Jacoby Pittman. It's like when the people tell them exactly what it is they have a problem with, they come back rather than giving us actionable information or something that we can work with. You just don't understand it, and it's a blind spot. And I think I don't remember who else on the panel said it. Someone said it's for the leaders of the next generation to consider. And I want to commend Garrett for standing up the way that he has, and for him at least being that one lone voice that looks to be forward thinking and becoming a leader in the city, while these other leaders like Brenda Priestley Jackson, Jacoby, and Lenny Curry are just like, oh, you just don't understand it. I mean, it's a very sad way to lead or to govern your people, in my opinion.
Thanks for the call, Tango. Michael Boylan made similar comments, as I noted. Claire Goforth, what about that?
Yeah, Tango makes a really great point there. I think that it's pretty ridiculous to say that no one in the public understands a deal just because they oppose it. I mean, we look at right now the division between longtime allies, Council President Tommy Yasuri and Mayor Lenny Curry on this deal. I mean, no one would say that Tommy Yasuri is this big opponent of Lenny Curry. They have been, you know, hand in hand on so many issues. But yesterday on 1010XL, Tommy Yasuri was very clear about his opposition to the bill. And one of the things that he said, and this is something that people have taken a lot of issue with, is that the mayor's office has been negotiating with Shad Khan basically in secret, which is their right since 2017. Whereas in the past, according to Hazzouri, they would have had meetings in the shade with the members of council so that they wouldn't have just found out about all of this in October and then have to make a decision in 3 months. While it may have been, they may have had hours of discussion on it, for many people to be sort of stunned by this sweetheart deal for a billionaire, it rocked them back on their heels, and then the public pushed back against it quite a lot. And one of the questions I think many of us have is whether or not it makes sense for the mayor to have negotiated with Shad Khan, one of his biggest campaign donors, because the result of a negotiation, sort of, it's a winning negotiation if both sides feel like they lost something. I looked at this deal and I thought, well, was the mayor negotiating on behalf of Shad Khan or against him? Because it just didn't seem like the city was really getting any kind of assurances on what this was going to look like in the end.
Hmm. Mary on the West Side. Hi, Mary.
Hi there. I just want to suggest that there needs to be some more self-awareness on the part of the mayor. When a mayor says that a vote is lost because of personal vendetta against him, I think some behavior modification is due here. That's all I want to say.
Okay, Mary, thank you for that. And that brings me to the second big story to get into for the week. Council member at large Matt Carlucci has announced already that he's running for mayor in 2023. He joins Richard Danford of the city's Urban League. He's also said to be throwing his hat in the ring. A.G. Gankarski, looks to be a crowded field for this open seat when Mayor Curry is termed out in a couple of years. But making these announcements more than 2 years ahead of the election is remarkable. And how much does that have to do with all of these recent developments, do you think?
I think it has a great deal to do with it because, you know, Carlucci came into office and, you know, it was remained to be seen at that point whether, to what extent he'd be a check on the mayor's office, but he's really seen his role as, you know, being that cautionary voice on things like Lot J and JEA and things like that. And he's always seen himself as a mayoral type. We know this. To call the shot 2.5 years out suggests to me that he's trying to basically reserve that sort of lane like Audrey Moran or somebody like that had in the 2011 campaign. You know, and that's a lane that can get you 20, 25, 30%, depending on how things shake out. So that's a significant lane to have. You know, Garrett Dennis, you know, he makes noise like he's a candidate, but we'll see. In 2019, he made that noise. It didn't happen. Daniel Davis from the Jacksonville Chamber will be running as sort of like the defender of the Curry legacy, I believe. And, you know, Al Ferrero, too, is somebody, you know, from the right who may be running also. So you're going to see a divided field here and a lot of people plotting the post-Lenny Curry vision, and part of that's because Curry for so long had such domination over the council, 19-0 votes, 18-1 votes. The previous council went along with all of it on pretty much everything with a little bit of blinking. This group, they don't see their futures as yoked with Lenny Curry's, and they're willing to kick back. I mean, Tommy Hazzouri, you know, they were yoked for a few years, but when Hazzouri broke, he broke. And now, you know, the thing you hear from the mayor's office is Hazzouri's new Anna Brochet. And, you know, Hazzouri, you know, is not complimentary of Curry at this point.
Fred Matthews, Carlucci is the most prominent Republican so far to announce that he will run for mayor. As AG said, Daniel Davis, who currently heads up the Jacks Chamber, is expected to run, also a Republican. As we watch this race unfold, it's 2+ years out, but how do you see this playing out in terms of how the two parties approach it? And can the Democrats make a real play for this office, given all of the political shifting of the ground we've seen in Duval County in the last several years?
That is really going to be the question. If Jacksonville has gone blue, it went blue in the governor's race a couple of years ago. It went blue now in the recent presidential race. But for some reason in local politics, it has remained red for the last 20 years. And it is hard to fathom if it will be able to come up, if the Democratic Party will be able to come up with a candidate. Am I right in hearing? I tried to get this confirmed the other day that Councilman Morgan's husband, Richard Danford, chairman of the
Urban League,
is running, is considering running?
That's what we're hearing, yes.
Well, I've been trying to get that confirmed with him. That would, he and Dennis, of course, would be interesting candidates on the Democratic side, but they're not very strong at this point, and I don't see that why Garrett Dennis would leave a comfortable seat to run for something that is not certain that he will get. Look, Carlucci is a strong candidate, well-liked at this point, and he won't have that much difficulty raising money. And he isn't perceived in many cases as a Republican. He's perceived many cases as a centrist. So it'll be interesting as we go over the next year. But he has a big target on his back right now.
It's 549-2937. Mark is in Murray Hill. Hello, Mark. Happy Friday.
Hi, guys. I was going to make a different point about the impeachment. I didn't know if you were taking calls.
We'll get to that in a few minutes. Any comments on the local news? And can you get off speakerphone?
Yes. I guess the one thing I would say, I'm glad that I'm not the only person that feels that's tired of being patronized about these issues. And someone brought up 1010XL. That show over there, those people that run those shows are, that on one hand they say they're a sports talk radio show, but they veer almost on an hourly basis into politics, and then they don't have any dissenting points of view. So it's like an echo chamber there, and you know they hide behind the sports talk radio thing, and really they're talking mostly about, they talk a lot about politics, particularly the Lot J. They were disappointed in the Lot J, and they said the same thing that a caller said previously, that they patronize people. They say, look, you just don't understand this deal if you're against it. But anyway, thanks for taking my call.
Thanks, Mark. You know, David Bauerlein, politics and sports, as of late in this town, have really become intertwined. Now, let's look at this from the point of view of the guys over on Sports Talk Radio or anyone who supported this deal. They had been arguing all along that it required significant public investment to work and that it was key to economic development for downtown and also key to keeping this NFL franchise happy, keeping them in Jacksonville. What about those arguments?
Yeah, that was definitely the argument you heard from Sports Talk Radio. And just as an aside, it's kind of fascinating that Sports Talk Radio is where some of the most interesting interviews post Lot J were done. Both Curry and Hazuri kind of talk candidly and maybe more so than they would just with traditional media. So it's kind of interesting to see them and hear them on those forums. But yeah, that was the argument that you heard a lot, was that this is part of what's needed in order to show the Jags that they can have a viable long-term future in the city, and that if you don't approve this deal, that is a signal to the Jaguars that the city is not ready and willing and able to make the kind of investments that are needed to really rise to the standard of being an NFL-level city. Mm-hmm. So that you heard a lot of that from people who were proponents of the deal. The stadium lease negotiations and stadium renovations probably are far more to the point about whether there's going to be a long-term future for the Jaguars here in Jacksonville.
And as we talk about the Jaguars, it's our Friday Media Roundtable with David Bauerlein, Claire Goforth, A.G. Gankarski, Fred Matthews, and yours truly, and your calls. It's 549-2937. We will shift gears in a moment, but first let me read this quick email from a listener. Please remind everyone that the council auditor found that the Lot J deal would only make the taxpayers 44 cents on the dollar. Sean, thanks for that reminder. That certainly was a successful argument with the city council. Okay, we're going to move on to the huge other story of the week. Even though the Jaguars won't be getting their live district at Lot J, it looks like they are getting three-time national champion and college coach of the decade, Urban Meyer, as their new coach. The Jaguars announcing that Meyer will become the team's seventh head coach in franchise history. Coming out of the Fox studio analyst booth and back onto the playing field, give us a call with your thoughts about Urban Meyer coming to Duval. 549-2937. Let's go to our season ticket holder, Claire Goforth, for a minute to get your take on this, Claire. You are a ride or die Jaguars fan, as everybody knows. So what do you think? What do you think?
I think we're in the upside down, 1010XL's talking politics, First Coast Connect's talking football.
That's
I mean, what is going on right now? But, I mean, I know we all have a lot of hope that we're going to see a new day in the Jaguars with Coach Meyer. There are some questions about whether or not the college coaching style that he has had is going to work in the NFL. Some people are concerned that it's going to end in some injuries, but I think that it's a good get for Jacksonville based on the pool that was out there. A lot of people are excited. It's going to get some butts in the seats. People want to see Urban Meyer out there, see what he can do, what kind of offense and defense he puts together and team. I think we're all wondering who's going to be the general manager. I haven't heard an announcement about that or even whispers. Maybe AG knows better than I do. But, you know, hey, it's time for change. Let's go Jags. Let's see something new on the field, some excitement.
That's right. Meyer does bring excitement, AG. He's also had 76 players drafted, including 21 first-round selections from the college level. Now, though, he's in the pros. And so, as Claire pointed out, after the last season, this team had to do something drastic. Will this be a game changer for the Jags? Did we lose AG? Oh, we might have. Let's go to Fred.
I'm here.
Go ahead, AG.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
That's okay.
A lot of these Jaguars players are pretty marginal in terms of, you know, where they are in their career development. They need that sort of college development that Urban Meyer offers. The issue that you run into with this guy is how long is he going to last? How long are the good times going to last with him? Because at Florida and Ohio State is a few years then gone. You know, Florida, it was like conflicts with the boosters. Ohio State, there were, you know, issues with the program itself. So we'll see what happens here. But they'll have Trevor Lawrence on the rookie contract. They'll have a lot of attractive deals. They've got a window here to move. You know, best case scenario, he becomes like Pete Carroll in Seattle. He sticks around 15 years. He doesn't have any more heart issues, et cetera. It all works out. Worst case scenario is like Nick Saban in Miami. You get a year and change and you're pushing reset, but you're doing that with Trevor Lawrence with some really good skill players. I don't think it's going to be so bad.
Fred Matthews, the team also, as we harken back to the Lot J discussion, they took a lot of blowback from taxpayers and fans over the Lot J deal because the fan base was arguing that in order for the public to front all this money, that they needed to be a more winning franchise. And so there's a lot of pressure on Urban Meyer, even with that deal dying. There's still a lot of pressure on this man to deliver some wins for this team quickly.
Well, look, it's a nice publicity hit to hire an Urban Meyer, but the reality of it is that Urban Meyer will learn the same thing that Steve Spurrier learned that Jimmy Johnson understood when he moved to the pros. Look, you're no longer going to be coaching kids. You're going to be coaching grown men who are earning millions of dollars, who have a lot at stake, who do have advertising deals that they have to protect, and you're not going to be able to order them around like you did the kids in college who had no choice but to follow that. The other part of this is that there's no guarantee that the NFL will be out from under this COVID process that they're under for this year, where your meetings are held on Zoom, where you don't have direct contact with your players all of the time. There are a number of factors that are going to play into this, but the other thing that's disturbing to me and other folks is that there were coaches available who have served and are serving on teams that have won the Super Bowl and were just as qualified, if not more so, and in the mix now. But the Jaguars, again, wanted to spend this kind of money on something untested in the NFL. It is not the same as the ACC.
Richard on the north side. Hi, Richard. Go ahead.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Real quick, I'm going to focus in on what Fred just said about the coach coaching kids, or not coaching kids, but coaching grown men. a friend of mine once said, Jacksonville doesn't need to grow as much as it needs to grow up. The city of Jacksonville is a kid. It's still acting like a child. We argue in public. We do all those kinds of things. So Jacksonville itself needs to grow up. The other thing is, my children are still on my insurance and will be until 26 years old. The average NFL player is old by the time he's 26. These guys are still mature-minded. They are still children and behave like children. All you need to do is look at their antics when they're off the field and get drunk for speeding and all that other craziness. I believe this is the perfect time for Jacksonville to recognize that it's just like Miami was back in the 70s. They got two winning seasons. It took 20 years before they built a new stadium, the Joe Robbie Stadium. And so it's a matter of time. What Jacksonville is trying to do, just like any other child would do, you want it all, and you want it all right now. You don't want to eat your vegetables. That's what I got to say.
All right, Richard. Thank you for that. On our Facebook page, Tom writes, hiring Urban Meyer as head coach of the Jags is just hype over substance. He will do no better than Steve Spurrier in the NFL. David Bauerlein, your thoughts?
Yeah, one of the puns I saw with the hiring of Urban Meyer was, quote, urban renewal. So people were saying that about Lot J as well, and we know how that turned out.
Yeah.
But, I think my colleague Gene Fournette wrote that the Jaguars had the best 1-2 marketing punch they've ever had with the prospect of drafting Trevor Lawrence with the number one pick and then hiring Urban Meyer, who really was one of those hires that made people sit up straight. So went from buzzkill to buzz thrill. So he's got a win, though. I mean, people are not going to go there just to watch a coach pace up and down the sideline. They want to see him turn the program around. It's a 1-15 team. He's got a lot of work ahead. And I think what Claire said is interesting about the idea, who's the general manager going to be? That's who's going to decide how they use these big draft picks they have coming up behind Trevor Lawrence, because the Jaguars have been snake bit for years on getting good quality players through the draft. That may be a bigger hire than Urban Meyer in terms of turning this team around.
And as Fred said, too, they'll begin their new season, hopefully finally coming out from under the cloud of the pandemic. I want to pivot to that panel. We are still seeing a rocky rollout of vaccinations around town and the state as Florida continues to see its highest daily death rate from the virus since August. State officials say the reason not everyone is getting vaccinated as quickly as they would like is because of the federal government. They're blaming the feds for not providing enough supply of vaccine. The latest place for seniors and frontline workers to get the vaccine, Publix stores in St. John's and Flagler counties. Claire Goforth, the state officials that we've talked to say they are doing the absolute best they can to distribute the Pfizer and Moderna products, that the problem is one of supply. So as we track this, we'll have to see if the supply increases, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's what everyone's hoping. I think the problem is one of everything. Everything seems to be a mess when it comes to this vaccine. I mean, you're seeing in other counties around the state where senior citizens are sitting in lawn chairs overnight waiting for a vaccine, systems crashing. They were using Eventbrite to schedule vaccines, and they would 800 appointments would become available. They'd be gone in 2 minutes. I know a senior citizen here in Jacksonville that's been trying to get an appointment, and it's like the phone line won't, they can't get through. They just keep calling and calling, and they can't get through. And it's, you know, you have to really feel sorry for the officials, the people who are trying to do this, that they haven't had a lot of assistance from the federal government. And they're already overtaxed. Our health system is incredibly overtaxed by the pandemic itself. But something's got to give. I know that President-elect Joe Biden has unveiled his agenda, and one of those things is a lot of funding for these, for the vaccine program. And I think that that's sorely needed. And hopefully they can get that done sooner rather than later.
The Biden inauguration is coming up Wednesday. You're right, Claire. The incoming administration is promising a big ramp up on all of this. We'll have to see, though, how successful that is. Meanwhile, in the wake of last week's deadly riots at the U.S. Capitol, the FBI, in a news conference the other day, says they are seeking suspects from North Florida. AG, they've already arrested several people from our area that took part in the insurgency last week. Your thoughts on the continuing fallout from that?
Well,
I mean, this is a constitutional crisis, a national security crisis, an insurrection, and, you know, even with time passing between the incident and now, it only seems more grievous as the shock wears off gradually. It does not surprise me that people from Florida or our area were involved in that, given the toxic brew of right-wing politics we've seen in this region for, you know, at least a decade since the Tea Party era. We've seen this wild rhetoric and pushing the envelope and these memes that aren't safe for work or polite conversation. And, you know, it's basically reap the whirlwind time. The president summoned these people, these perpetual losers, up to Washington, D.C., told them to march on the Capitol, dipped out, and go watches it on TV, you know, while all hell is breaking loose. It is a complete abnegation of duty from this president. But people from this area love this president. They love that kind of rhetoric from him. And, you know, the question now is, did the president incite it or not? What a pitiful question to be ending a presidential administration on.
And the only president in history to be impeached twice. David Bauerlein, the congressman from Jacksonville, former Sheriff John Rutherford, did vote along with more than 100 of his colleagues on the GOP side of the U.S. House to object to the certification of the electoral results. There have been calls for John Rutherford to resign for enabling the lies of this president. Rutherford has doubled down, though, and defended his vote.
Yeah, I don't really understand the arguments he's been making, the idea that you should just cast aside millions of votes and then have Congress step in and decide who the next president should be. The courts have found repeatedly that the elections were legitimate. It is something the states decide how to run their elections, and the federal state court system has said nothing went wrong. So the idea that, you know, these protest votes are trying to essentially overturn the election through objecting to the certification of Electoral College, it does feed into this idea that there's something that was stolen or illegitimate about the election. And you know, obviously Rutherford didn't call on people to storm the Capitol, but it sort of creates this environment where then it gets ratcheted up. And some of the video that's come out has been horrifying in terms of what some of the police officers were going through. There were threats. Obviously, one police officer was killed. This was the worst kind of violent outbreak. It was not just a protest that went wrong.
Yeah, a violent insurrection with the crowd whipped up based on lies. Claire, let's be clear. The election was free and fair and certified under the laws of the states. Dozens of court challenges were tossed because there was simply no evidence to prove the president's and his allies' allegations of fraud.
Yeah, I mean, he's got a merry gang of nutbags repeating these lies about the election. there is no evidence.
I'm sorry. Let me just repeat the disclaimer that the views of our panel do not necessarily reflect the views of WJCT News. Go ahead.
Yes, certainly so. And I mean, I'm thinking of attorneys like Sidney Powell and Lynn Wood when I say that. These people are repeating lies, and they are doing it for their own gain, and they are undermining faith in our election. I agree with David Bauerlein. I'm not suggesting that Congressman Rutherford is among them, but I do wonder, what is his point in trying to overturn the results of the election? I mean, how would he react if Donna Deegan tried to overturn the results of the recent election in which he won? That would be ludicrous. But I think where he's coming from is, quite frankly, days after the insurrection attempt, there were people in his district standing on a corner, I was told, waving Trump flags and signs, people who were very much supporting everything that Trump says. Meanwhile, a plane flies overhead asking him to resign. And it just sort of shows that clash of this polarized political world that we're in right now, where there are a core group of Republicans who firmly believe in absence of any evidence that the election was stolen. And the project that the Daily Dot, who am I right for, we've unveiled today, an election disinformation project in which we look at the right-wing echo chamber and how that has unfolded and fed into this. And I think it is a really interesting look, and it shows us just how these people have been led astray, not just by Trump, but by right-wing media outlets, ranging from even Fox and all the way down to like the lower levels.
I want to wrap up with one other important story from the week. Just an unbelievable news week. Martin Luther King Day is Monday. The city will host its popular annual parade, of course. Meanwhile, today, once again, the city of Jacksonville is having two community breakfast observances instead of one. This is happening now for the third year in a row, and it's due to longstanding divisions with the local NAACP and the Curry administration. Fred, the head of the local NAACP, Isaiah Rumlin, says they will continue to have a separate breakfast until the city hall leadership addresses a litany of issues like the Lot J deal and long-needed infrastructure improvements on the northeast and west sides.
Well, that means that we'll continue to have these separate breakfasts for at least the next 2 years, because
right.
The Lot J deal is over, and there is no love lost at this point between the NAACP, the SCLC, and other groups with the mayor's office. That is not going to change. The mayor's and staff, and especially within this group, are not going to change their policy. So we're going to have this difference of opinion and this difference because, again, it's a racial issue, but it's also a financial and simple leadership issue. So we're going to have these separate breakfasts for some time to come.
Which is unfortunate to see, and they're actually happening this morning. But again, a reminder for folks, the Martin Luther King Day Parade is Monday morning in downtown Jacksonville. Come on out for that. It's a lot of fun. We will actually be off Monday, this show, in observance of the holiday. But what a week that was. Thank you, Fred Matthews, Claire Goforth, A.G. Gankarski, and David Bauerlein. So good to have you on the show, as always. Have a great three-day weekend, and we'll see you soon.
Thanks, Melissa.
Thanks, Melissa.
Thanks, all. A quick break, and in a moment, don't miss it, folk legend Roger McGuinn of the Byrds joins the show. It's a preview of his solo performance this weekend at the Thrasher Horn Center. More about the Byrds' life, music, and legacy after this. You're listening to First Coast Connect on WJCT News 89.9. We'll be right back.
Congarean Pen, dedicated to agriculture and culinary endeavors, offering field-to-fork dining and outdoor experiences on over 300 acres. Sip, dine, explore. Information at congareeandpen.com.
Wayne Hogan of the Terrell Hogan Personal Injury and Wrongful Death Law Firm. Serious injury cases are complex, and civil trial attorneys present the evidence juries need to see and hear. More at waynehogan.law.
We know that political conspiracy theories can pose a real threat to democracy, but they're also straining family relationships.
I am embarrassed. about where my father's mental state is, but I also am devastated because I feel like I've lost him.
How conspiracies like QAnon have pushed some relationships to the breaking point and what can be done to fix them. This afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Starting at 4 on WJCT News 89.9.
This week on Science Friday, how folklore can help us understand conspiracy theories.
It links together lots of different stories that we're familiar with as a way of explaining what's going on in the world.
And how artificial intelligence can help combat those bogus conspiracies. It's all on Science Friday from WNYC Studios.
This afternoon at 3 here on WJCT News 89.9.
For some, the decision to impeach our 45th president had echoes of the words of our 32nd.
My vote to impeach our sitting president is not a fear-based decision. I am not choosing a side. I'm choosing truth. It's the only way to defeat fear.
We'll look ahead to the start of a new chapter and look back on a week for the history books. It's the Friday News Roundup, next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, Roger McGuinn, folk legend and famed founder of the Byrds, plays the Thrasher Horn Center in Orange Park this weekend. I spoke with McGuinn about his return to touring after the pandemic and his work to keep folk music vibrant and relevant. Take a listen.
Roger, thanks so much for being with us. Good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you.
It's exciting to have you coming to town for a really special and intimate performance, it sounds like, at the Thrasher Horn Center. What's it like to get out and perform again after almost a year of musicians and bands really being put on the sidelines due to the pandemic?
Yeah, well, I haven't been out of the house for a year, so it's going to be
right.
A real treat for me to get back on stage, and I'm anxiously awaiting it.
Right, and a limited number of tickets, a socially distanced event. Of course, as the founder of the Byrds, you have an amazing fan base, but this will be a solo performance. It sounds like an intimate evening for your audience, sort of a journey of story and song. What can the audience expect?
That's right. I tell stories between the songs. I set up the songs with a different story. I have a lot of different stories, and I enjoy telling them. People like to hear them. And the songs, I set up the where the song came from, other people that I've sung it with, or various stories, a lot of things.
Tell us, too, about the projects you've been keeping busy with since you haven't been able to tour. Tell us about your Folk Den project and the latest with that.
Okay, well, the Folk Den project is something I started back in 1995 out of concern that the traditional side of folk music was being neglected in favor of singer-songwriters. And I've put up over 300 traditional songs on my website, McGuinn.com, in a section called The Folk Den. And they're free downloads. It's an MP3. It's got a story about the song, the chords, and the lyrics, and a little picture sometimes. And it's just a labor of love, and it keeps me busy working in the studio. I'm also working on a project. Back in 1968, I ran into a Broadway director named Jacques Levy, and he asked me to help him write the score of a Broadway musical. Mm. And we came up with 26 songs, many of which ended up on Byrds records and some on my solo records, but the play never got mounted on Broadway. It did. There was a performance of it at Colgate University when he was working there, but that's the only time. But I'm doing audio recordings of the songs of it now, and it's going to be a contiguous album of the songs from Gene Tripp, which is an anagram of Peer Gynt. It was loosely based on Heinrich Ibsen's Peer Gynt.
Oh, wow. That is amazing. What's it like for someone like yourself, a music industry icon, with songs that have just so embedded in the culture, to see your music remaining relevant in this new way?
It's very rewarding, and it's something that we kind of planned, because I remember back in when we started the Byrds, our manager, Jim Dixon, who was a producer engineer at World Pacific Records, he said, you guys have to, you know, do some enduring quality. You don't want to do these bubblegum songs just to get a hit. And that we did. We adhered to that.
Wow. Well, it's we're going to listen to a little bit of your music as we close the show. Roger McGuinn, founder of the Byrds, this weekend at the Thrasher Horn Center in Orange Park. A limited number of seats available. Tickets at thcenter.org. Roger McGuinn, a pleasure. Have a great show. Thank you.
Thank you. Nice talking to you.
And we'll close now with the Byrds. Have a nice weekend, everyone. Enjoy the music.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.